at 35. Thank you so much.
Yes, all the same flowers. $20, please.
Have a nice day.
Yes, time for the retail panel. Dominique Lamb is CEO of the National Retail Association. Good afternoon.
Hello.
We've got Gary Mortimer, an associate professor at QUT's Business School. Hello.
Hi, Kelly. Great to be here.
And helps if I do that. Christine, I'm having a terrible day with technology.
Yeah,
it has hated me since I woke up this morning. I've busted a computer. I busted the printer. It's all been ugly.
It's always the way.
I'm just praying the panel holds together. And Christine Moody, founder of Brand Audits. Hello.
Hi, Kelly.
I'm very well, see, not happening to me
today. Hi, everybody.
At all.
We're back.
All right, now, Queen Street Mall. So many differing opinions on it anyway, but there's a move towards a different type of industry or brand coming into these bigger shopping areas. What's happening here, Dominique?
So what we've seen in a number of different CBD areas around the country is that now we're really shifting the mix in our CBDs towards people that are time poor. So effectively things like banks, things like post offices, things that provide convenience to shoppers that, you know, perhaps they don't get time on a weekend to go and visit, you know, their local Optus store or something like that. Just something that they can get to in their breaks and things like that. But what we're also seeing, and certainly we've talked about a number of times, is that those high-end brands are coming. So, you know, if you have a look at the Brisbane City Council website, you know, there's definitely investment into those very much personalised high-end brands that are coming along. But in saying that, the list also very much are targeting Fortitude Valley, which is really shifting, I think, some of that glitz and glamour that we're used to seeing in those in that strip mall that you would typically see in the CBD.
Because you see that at James Street, there's a new boutique hotel about to open, and in the ground floor retail space, there's some exciting spas and beauty brands going in there, and that will change the whole street, I think, because it's a different level of retail going into James Street. But it's still exciting.
And it's almost as though history is repeating itself. I'm sure older listeners would remember the Valley. I remember it in the 70s and the 80s.
It was the place.
That was a retail hub. Mm. And certainly we didn't have a mall. We had Queen Street, which wasn't actually a mall at any stage. We had McWhirter's. Then obviously Maya took over for McWhirter's there in the Valley. It was a great shopping district. And then I think the 80s, listeners may ring in and say, oh, I'm wrong, but the 80s it really tied. That's where you sort of saw the mall developed very quickly into Queen Street there, and the whole retail sector moved into the CBD. I think we're seeing that move back out again, and we're seeing this rejuvenation there in the valley.
But definitely too, I think it needed it. I mean, there's lots, it sort of follows the housing developments too, doesn't it? The units and et cetera, because people want to dine and shop, et cetera. So
you're having a gentrification process.
That's right. I mean, I bought a house in New Farm in 88. And it was, like, people looked at us like we were weird.
Hmm.
Not
and
so much so
laughing
much.
Now, Christine.
Yeah, that's right. I don't have that property anymore. But anyway. But, yeah, it's interesting how it's changed because, you know, it goes where people want to live, they want to dine, they want to work as well. So we're seeing this work-life hubs happening, I think. It's a big trend.
Well, with Queen Street, though, they're on the high-end brands, are they going into Queen Street? Or because my question would be why?
So,
why there?
Yeah, so I mean, certainly that Edward Street development at the bottom there has always been a target for those glamour brands. You know, we know that we've got a whole heap of stuff happening at the top, you know, with Treasury and all sorts of things happening there, which they'll have those, you know, six-star hotels and very, very different types of retail that Brisbane probably has never seen before. But what we know is going in at this stage certainly the Daily Edit is going in. We're seeing a lot of those online players like Mon Purse pop up, the Lip Lab, which I think Christine will be very excited about. Furla's going
yes,
in.
Excellent.
You look, they're definitely a new look store. You know, we know that they're going to have significant space and it will be about kind of, you know, that experience shop so you can go in there and, you know, get that really high-end service and pick those products that will be a one-off or they'll be an item that's in limited stock so that if you do get one, it'll keep its value for a longer period of time.
And that aligns with all the hotels that are opening in the city too, because we've got tourists. So when you're on holidays, you always have time to shop. Yeah. So what are we
going to... So it's not for the average Brisbaneite.
It may not be, but often, I mean, I think that tourism brings, like the stores that are really expanding are the luxury brand stores because we've got a lot of tourists from overseas, they have time to shop and they shop.
Get their dollar.
Yes, exactly.
It's interesting though because when you go to one of the big shopping centres, whenever you see that a shop has gone, and what's coming next? Whenever it is a health fund or a travel agent or another bank or something like that, I'm always terribly disappointed. I never get excited about that. I'm always like, oh, really? Yeah. I can do that online.
Yes.
So I find it interesting that those sort of industries are actually going shopfront when I would think most of them are. It's big online business, but obviously not.
Well, I think there's a lot of businesses around that area as well. So it's not just necessarily about individuals probably popping in there. You know, it would be about conveyances and banks and, you know, it would be about, you know, different types of businesses interacting with other businesses as well. So, it's funny. You know what makes me really excited about a store? A chemist. I love a nearby chemist. and it's because you can do many things there now. Like, I mean, they've got so much giftware and they've diversified and it's just so much more convenient. Like, there's one that's open near us on Park Road and it's got a cafe attached to it now and specializes in all these organic foods and things. And chemist is my favourite place to be, so I'm quite happy about that.
Chemist at a cafe? I'd never heard of that. Yep. Why not? You can have coffee anywhere.
That's it.
A drug of choice. Another drug, and it's legal, so we like that. All right. Now, what is HIO? Is it the answer to our mall worries and high rents?
Well, potentially. There's a whole range of studies taking place in the US around, they're calling it Brooklynification. Yes. But what this particular model is going to do is take nine stores, eight of which would be brand new to that particular area, and they're going to launch them as almost like pop-up stores in one location. Mm. So it's going back to that kind of concept of marketplace or the department store as we used to know it, where you could go there and you would get, you know, those items that you couldn't get elsewhere.
Yep.
And it allows them to trial that touch and feel model, you know, having a bricks and mortar store when maybe they've never had it before. So it's without the commitment to a big long lease, you know, that's going to potentially cost them lots of money, and they get to test it on the different clientele. Mm. And these people take space in, you know, all the great locations. So, you know, you're not worried about kind of being on a couple of back streets or anything like that. Mm. But it makes it affordable for that new entry.
Yeah.
It's a bit like co-work for retail, yeah, really, isn't it? You can test it. You can test the location. You can actually talk to your customers that are coming in. Well, if you're purely online, you can obviously talk to them via phone and email, et cetera. But it's great to get that feedback. And that's why stores do it, to test the location and actually to actually have a conversation with the customers as well.
Yeah.
So it's a great idea.
So, Gary, how would you see that working?
It certainly builds trust, and that's one of the challenges of online retailing. And we talked before about, you know, you don't get overly excited when an insurance company goes in or a bank goes in. And I do a lot of my banking and insurance online, but if I think about my parents, they may actually still choose to go and actually meet with a bank teller and actually help transact funds or move or write a bank check. And same with insurance.
Check?
Yeah, remember those days?
Wow.
Yeah, a bank
that
check.
That is old school.
Yeah. Or insurance. So, you know, while I can buy my own insurance online and things like that, it's still nice to go and actually talk to somebody and transact the, you know, the claim there and then. So they still hold a place. So with retail, having online retail just doing a pop-up for a short period of time, gets them to touch and feel the product, that establishes trust, and then shoppers are quite happy to buy online.
You know, there's actually someone else that does this, which is really interesting. Have you ever been – there's a store called Cube –
Yes.
And
yes.
They have entrepreneurs that just have a cube in the store with a particular product, and you rent that particular cube. I mean, that's a whole other smaller scale, but we're definitely seeing retailers engage in new ways.
Mm. I have seen one of those. I think it was at Indooroopilly when
that's
I saw
it.
Yeah. And I had never seen that concept before. But it was actually quite fun because there were different things along there and different designers, and I thought it might. Is it a way for local designers, for example, if you're a jewellery designer,
definitely,
to just have your little cube or whatever, and there you go. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's really cost effective. It's almost like a subscription service where they just pay for that cube for the period that they want to test it, and then they can come in and revamp their cube, you know, as time goes on, X amount of times. And, yeah, it works for small business very very well.
Or take on extra cubes as well. They don't just have to have one cube. They can actually add different – they can test things. Mm. So it's a really cheap way of getting into retail.
Yeah, and you get to also, you know, if you're around the area, just go in and have a bit of a look too. All right. Let's move on to a shoe company that's been around for about 10 years, but it looks like it's going out of business. Going on about Shoes of Prey or Shoe of Prey.
Shoes of Prey. Really, really sad story, I think, because I think, you know, a great young female entrepreneur started this, and her story was very much around she couldn't find particular types of shoes that really liked, and what was out there was really mass market. She wanted her own individual customised shoes. So she went about doing this and originally started in Australia, then started to manufacture in the US. So this is a pure play retailer. So you jumped online, and you could design, customise your own shoes, your wedges, your heels, the fabric, the inner linings, and then they would deliver. I know Dom had a pair made for her wedding, and they were really beautiful, high-quality shoes.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah.
What's the issue with it then? Why hasn't it worked?
So she reports that she could never break it into the mainstream. And I think also in some ways, and maybe Chris and Dom might disagree or agree, they started to move into other areas. So I often talk about stick to your knitting, so stick to what you're very good at, and she was very good at that. And then she moved management position, she bought in a venture capitalist, and I think the business then expanded away from high fashion customized shoes, even into athleisure and sneakers and things like that were customized as well. But as soon as you start branching in, your market expands, and then you put yourself into direct competition with other players.
I love this brand. I use them when they first started, so anything new I try and test it. I love it for several reasons. Yes, you can design your shoe, so you can. It's so easy. It's intuitive. I mean, when they first started, maybe it was a little bit clunky, but it was incredibly sophisticated towards the end there currently. And you could choose things. You could even customise it. So if you're having a wedding, you can actually put your names in the shoes and things like that. So
Did you do that, Dom?
I didn't, actually. Yeah. No, I didn't put the names in there, but you can do it.
You can do it. I did it. Not for my wedding, but for something else. But it was amazing. So we had all the right ingredients. And when it was delivered, black box, beautiful tissue paper, a note from the person who made the shoes. It had all the ingredients to work.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see what really washes up with this. I think it was just the diverse range she's ended up with. It's confusing. I haven't been on the website for a while, but there'll be a lot of reasons why it hasn't. But it had all the ingredients to make it work.
With the price, I mean, people will spend a lot on their shoes. If you really love shoes, you'll spend a lot of money on them. But were they something that you bought for your wedding, for example, and you've bought a pair?
To test it, really?
To test it. That's it, but you haven't gone back. How much of the business as well is that one-off special thing you get and you don't go back regularly? I don't even know how much they are, and I suppose...
Yeah, so they came in around about 300, I think, roughly.
Yes, about 298 is about
depending
average.
On what you do. So,
for those who love their shoes, they're going, oh, that's all right. The rest of us are going, what?
And their position was very much about customisation and personalisation. Yeah. So, like, if you were going to design your own shoes, then nobody else in the nightclub or in the restaurant or in the special event, the ball you're going to, is going to have those shoes. They're very much your own. So currently they've suspended taking orders as they look at their business. 10 years, it's not a long time in the game, but again, I guess it just goes to show how competitive it is out there in the marketplace, particularly in fashion and clothing and footwear and accessories. Yeah.
Well, talking about footwear, Christine, tell us about Accent Group. What's happening with them?
Well, Accent Group, I think your listeners will know the brand, the Athlete's Foot. That's one of the brands they have, and they've had incredible record net profit this year, $47 million actually, so it's up 17.9% for the year. And what they say it comes down to is their customer service. So the in-store, they've got great technology. You can do your foot impression and get the right shoes, etc. So they've invested in technology, but they've also invested in staff training. So the experience in-store is fantastic. So all those things have come together. They do a lot of online sales as well. So they spend a lot of time. They always had good bricks and mortar stores, but they've created great online stores as well.
I wish I'd invested in sneakers 20 years ago.
Oh, they're just going great guns.
Ridiculous how much they are.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there's a company now in the States that just specialises in cleaning them now.
Wow.
So you can take your favourite pair and they'll refurbish them for you. That's all they do.
You're not just getting the old gurney out?
They're like new, apparently, when you get them back. But that's I love to have those great stories because they're doing well.
Yeah, nice to hear of someone actually doing well.
Yes.
Talking about doing well, Aldi has come out as the most trusted supermarket in Australia again. Why is this? What is Aldi doing that the others aren't?
Isn't this interesting? So this is Roy Morgan Research. They look at net trust scores and they measure feedback from about 10,000 shoppers. And they look at which brands are trusted more, but they also measure distrust. That's how they get their net score. So they take their distrust measure away from their trust measure and they go, oh, here's the top brands. I think Qantas came in at number 4. Bunnings came in at number 2. Aldi did it exceptionally well. Which is interesting because only 2 weeks ago we're sitting here on the panel talking about Dick Smith leaving his food division. Dick Smith at the time levelled, a lot of blame at Aldi, saying it's a very secretive company, it's a private company, they don't pay our taxes and things like that. That's not entirely true. So I had a look at Aldi and looked through their information. They do pay tax. They employ about 11,000 workers. So a lot of what the terminology around secretive behaviour wasn't really true. And while one businessman was quite critical, they asked 10,000 shoppers. And this is the second year in a row that Aldi has come up as number one. It's the most trusted brand in Australia, followed by Bunnings, Qantas. I can't remember what number 3 was, but someone will text and tell what number 3 was.
It was the ABC.
The ABC was actually up there in the top 10.
Yeah, we were. We were in the top 4. I'm not sure if we were 3rd or 4th, but I know
that's right. It would have been ABC then. Yeah, that's right.
I love Aldi. Yeah. I mean, they're going through now revamping all their stores. They've just done Newstead store. I haven't been there yet, but my husband filmed it for me. He said it's a completely different feel. Like they're always looking at new ways of delivering great products and great prices. So.
All right. Well, it was Qantas before us, then ABC at 4.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah. Good. But the thing is, though, for products, though, I wonder how much of Aldi is just, at least it's something new and it's not Coles and Woolworths. So what is there about the big two and all the negativity that's been funneled into them over a long period of time that works for Aldi? Because I've shopped at all 3 and, yeah.
They're not very different, are they?
You know, the stuff from both of those has been just as good as the stuff from Aldi. I'm not that brand sort of loyal or whatever, but it didn't seem – actually, it used to annoy me that I used to have to pack my own bags at the end.
Yeah.
I did not like that. So I wonder about trust, like why trust Aldi more than Coles or Woolies?
So trust was measured in a number of different ways. So conformity, reliability, transparency, you know what you're going to get when you get to Aldi. It works. It's reasonably good quality. So all of those variables come into trust. And it was a really good question. Does that mean people trust the other supermarkets less? That's not necessarily the case. In fact, most supermarkets probably got the same trust score, but it was the distrust score that actually eroded Coles and Woolworths. Mm-hmm. And that could have been quite contextual because we've been going through the plastic bag removal. We've got some negative criticisms about their little plastic collectibles.
The plastic bags for Coles are back today, 15 cents.
Yep.
They handled that badly, though. I think that's pretty, that's known, isn't it? That's no secret.
Yeah.
That people knew about it. I reckon they gave in too quick, but that's back. But what gets me now is that those little plastic miniature things, which is probably, I don't know this for sure. In fact, I'm probably making it up. But those little plastic things are probably made out of the single-use plastic bags that you can't sell anymore. And the smaller something is, the less recyclable it is.
Yep.
So we seem to have replaced the single-use plastic bags with these miniature things. I don't. What are they about? Because they're grown
kids, women.
Yeah, but they're grown women trading them on Facebook. Ladies, stop it. Stop it immediately.
Well, they created something. Apparently some of the school principals are banning them from schools because there were fights over them.
Yeah, they're collectibles. And look, I think I actually did an interview with a 9-year-old child about this.
Yeah.
And her brothers play with them very differently. They stack them in different ways. Her sister plays with them with her doll's house. But she herself was looking at collecting these items because, there were certain ones that were quite rare. So, she didn't have the Chobani yogurt, for instance. Mm-hmm. And so there was this real kind of fun or attachment created to these items that you would, go to the supermarket with mum to get. Mm-hmm. Parents wanted all the packets. I mean, this is the thing. And you can't see what's in the packet when you get them either.
No. So the surprise.
So it's all about the surprise and the anticipation. Yeah. They're not all plastic. Some of them are cardboard.
Oh, are they just the new Pokemon? Like
yeah. A little bit, know, yeah. A bit like that's that. Right.
And social media helps as well because they're yeah. all they'll all be on there with Instagram saying, "This is what I got. This is what yeah. who's got this one? Who's got that one?"
Well, it's the mums. The oh, mums yeah. have got yeah. them catalogued.
But we're just using more plastic. Wasn't this the point of the plastic bag ban that we didn't? But no, now we're all collecting little bits of plastic over and over again in plastic bags.
I suspect we use more plastic bags than the amount that they will produce of these things. They have a limited lifespan and they have done this before with other items, mainly Disney-like mm. type things. But I'm sure, look, I can pretty much say there were definitely more plastic bags used yeah. than what is plastic produced bag. For these yeah. little things.
Well, there was a time that one of the fast food chains, the burger chain, mm. Would give out, you know, mm. there was constant competition for, it was Snoopy's, I think. Was yeah. it Snoopy's? That went oh. off like a frog in a yeah. sock.
Yeah, competition.
I remember
yeah.
Smurfs. Smurfs in the 1970s.
Smurfs are still around.
Are they?
They are. So strawberry shortcake.
Still only one female, though.
Wow.
Rainbow Bright, all of them. Oh, you can really? Still. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Care Bears are back.
Care Bears are back.
Care Bears are back. Yes.
Baby love.
Yeah. One thing that isn't going away is bottled water.
Oh. No.
How are marketers getting us to pay for something that is essentially free?
We're really good, aren't we?
We're quite just not rational. Human beings are not rational mostly.
So, yeah, this one popped up again this week, and it does seem to pop up regularly every year or so. We seem to talk about plastic and plastic bottles. And then we talk about the bottled water situation. I did the calculation of my own sort of water bill and went, okay, well, what's my state water bulk charges plus my retailer add-on that's going to pay me to get the water to my house? It's about $3.60 for 1,000 litres. And had a look at there's a professor out of Western Sydney, and I've forgotten her name. Her name's gone blank on me. She's very good, and she's actually looked at sort of the water that comes out of our taps. And it's quite clearly articulated that to service water to homes, water companies need to go through around about 200 different types of tests and regulations. So the World Health Authority used the Australian model for tap water to be a basis globally. So the water that comes out of your tap is really, really healthy for you. And marketers of bottled water won't say it's unhealthy because they can't legally say that. But what they will say is they'll use terms like purity. So this bottled water is very pure. Or they'll use images of rainforests or glaciers.
This came out of a bubbling brook from a stream.
And that's the image it gives you.
Humans haven't been here for 2,000 years. It's like, no.
Yeah. So there's certainly
out of a tap, isn't it?
There's certainly a convenience value in bottled water. It's easy to grab one out and put it in your port in your backpack.
Yep.
But is it any better for you than tap water? I'd probably suggest not.
No, they say it's not. It's been tested.
Yeah, it's not. Just stop not. It immediately. stop it immediately. Retail panel, it has been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in and having a chat.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.